So we're going to move on to our second section of the virtualization track of the CESAR conference, looking at introspection for sandboxing. And Yves Luyer from CEA List will be speaking to us. So firstly, I'm delighted to be able to speak to you in this session, which brings together those who have hijacked virtualization technologies to do code analysis, security, and sandboxing. And in this presentation, I will be looking at validation of these virtual platforms for security analysis. So firstly, I'd like to clarify what virtualization technology is all about, and in particular, talk about the virtualization of electronic systems and what electronic systems virtualization is. It is the ability to simulate a target electronic system on a host electronic system. This has been carried out for many years with many uses in different fields. Firstly, these simulators were built to do hardware prototyping, what will happen if I add or take away a component, etc. And then we moved to virtual test bench applications, which were software oriented, where virtualization is used to do anticipated software development to see how it would behave on various types of hardware. Then there are applications that were more to do with interoperability, which is more like virtualization as we understand it today, application-oriented, even if we don't have the hardware which the software is supposed to work on, and also optimize resources. So, for example, putting a number of applications that are supposed to work on a number of physical machines, whether we could optimize load by making them run on a single machine. This is what virtualization is doing today. And the first electronic system simulation technologies have continued and have been applied to code analysis in security and safety. In all these applications and the virtualization of electronic systems, the important thing is for these applications to be able to reuse various technology building blocks that are quite common, and we have re-implemented these building blocks. But it would be a lot better to be able to factor these techniques to bring down development costs and increase confidence in these virtual platforms. And we need confidence, as we will see as the presentation progresses. So this is the outline. I'm going to briefly talk about the environment, then talk about the virtualization platform with which we're working, which is called Unisim VP. Look at cybersecurity use cases with BinSec type applications, and then look at my research, which is validation of this platform by means of a self-verifying simulator. So one context briefly, as everyone will realize, in the space of 50, 60 years, we have transitioned from extremely simple software implemented by monolithic code to extremely complex software stacks in which programs are built on virtual machines and using hypervisors and so forth, are deployed in distributed manner with massive service parallelism and application parallelism. So these are very complex software stacks with related security issues. This complexity is addressed by having a systemic view that is required for scalability, for upscaling, with rights management, confinement, firewalls, proxies, legacy technologies like that, and then also more recent approaches such as traffic monitoring and anomaly detection via machine learning. Then there are also code-centric approaches, which are also still very important, looking at what is happening in the code of each of these building blocks through best practice in terms of code engineering. That is a key aspect, having well-designed, robust code which minimizes attack surfaces by design. And then also we are looking to have automated code analysis tools allowing us to speed up code verification and detection of flaws and vulnerabilities. Virtual platforms have been something we've been developing for 20 years now for various use cases, hardware prototyping, specifications, definition, workbenches for software, and often to do with security and software development and anticipation. This virtual platform framework consists of a library of component models to build these simulators, such as processor models, memory models, connection models, and then we build various services with third-party or in-house tools for test, VNV, trace analysis, etc. And more and more code profiling with analyzers that are more and more increasingly well developed. So how do we do this? Well, firstly, we take existing types of simulator and try and rewriting their programming by introducing all the data from processes, memories, networks implemented with polymorphic types, which can allow us to perform practical computing as the processor is supposed to perform. So here, what a processor does in an addition. So these are actual values that are used, or more abstract symbolic data, equations, variables. And so we will be able to tell us more than just what happened functionally. Up until now, this enriched code analysis has been used to deal with digital stability and floating point instrumentation, but and also to make code more robust, code sanitizing, so looking at computation on unsanitized values and so forth. More recently, we've used a use case with the with BINSEC. This is a binary code analyzer for security, which is a tool for analyzing machine code. So using formal method analysis for automated code verification, we take in machine code as an input. We use front-end decoders to give an internal representation that is then distributed to graphs, by the backends, analyzers, which will do security analysis, detecting vulnerabilities and checking whether there's any malware present. So we connect our simulators to these new security resources. So abstract code execution to produce the intermediary demonstration used by BINSEC, And in the space of 2 to 3 weeks, we was able to use a front end, which a lot of people have been asking for. And in the space of 2 weeks a week, we had a hard front end and demonstrated demos come from Cyber Grand Challenge, a decompilation of machine code to C source, and also applied it to vulnerability detection in an avionics real-time OS, which is one of the main reasons we wanted to have this type of front end. And you apply non-interference proof to backends and other applications. So that brings me to my second part, in which we looked at how we could validate these simulators so they could be trusted. We wanted to do this to be really sure that these simulators would faithfully reproduce reality, firstly because our simulators are used in highly critical environments, particularly the nuclear industry. People would be developing hardware which then needs to go to nuclear power plants. So this these people asked us for significant validation reports. And we also apply formal methods based on the fact that our simulators are accurate, because if they're not, of course, all the rest of the network falls over. And we aim to use feed in instruction by instruction levels to simulators to detect errors in simulators on the basis of an application, because this is something which is very difficult. You can have an error in a simulator or a processor which is very hard to spot. The application doesn't notice, but a software, if you have a software error, it's very difficult to get back to the source. So we recommend to look on an instruction by instruction basis. And we wanted a self-verifying simulator because all of this is done by hand. It's very tedious, and test campaigns are very cumbersome, and we would like to be able to automate that. The principle of this self-verifying simulator is quite straightforward. There are two stages. Firstly, we scan all the possible instructions, give them to the simulator to decode them, create instructions, and our enriched analysis generates a semantic description of these instructions. And with these instructions, we then select items for testing and try and have as broad a scope and as relevant a scope as possible. And then there's a second phase online in which we directly generate tests, format them as functions. We look at each instruction, look at inputs, outputs, and check this on actual hardware and on the simulation. The benefit of this approach is that, as I was saying, we have automated a number of stages. We've factorized the development, factored it. Everything in blue is a library that is immutable, it's not change. And in green, we have the same simulation code, which will be customized to make a decode analyzer or a simulator. So we have very, very little manual coding to do. In practice, we did do some manual coding. Generally, we do random generation of instruction bytes, and then we look at instructions relating to coding. These two techniques together work quite well normally, but unfortunately, in the x86-64 case, these cannot be used because the set in question, the instructions are 15 octets long with a huge number of possible encodings. So we had to introduce a little familiarity of x86-64 knowledge. The second place in which we had to introduce architectural knowledge was comparison of instructions. Firstly, because it's very difficult for us to understand side effects without being familiar with the architecture. If we had to look at everything that may have changed, it would be very time-consuming. We have to be more selective And if we look at just what the simulator tells us we've changed, then we've introduced bias. So we will need to inject some architectural knowledge to know whether there may not be other side effects. And despite all that, there are still some side effects which we cannot compare or which are difficult to compare. Here are some of them. Many people are interested in this. Be able to define all instructions on a processor. That is something which is very difficult. Some of them have quite dangerous side effects which can crash the processor. And we can also have legitimate instructions, but if they are inputted in certain orders, there will be problems. So there are these side effects which you have to be careful about. There's also interrupts, branches, memory access, hypervisor ops, access to hardware counters. We have resolutions for most of these, cheating a little bit to make the inputs work properly, and then get this to operate in protected environments with debuggers. And eventually we get difficulty to define side effects, particularly environment-sensitive instructions such as time or temperature. It's difficult to say whether they are properly simulated or not. This validation has been set up in our simulators. We discovered bugs in some simulators that have been working for 10 years, which appeared to be bug-free. And we found still others using these automated techniques, so that it works for us. But the question is, does it work for other simulators? Well, we have not yet had time to implement these methods and techniques in other simulators, but we probably will be able to do so soon. We could reuse the tests, but again, we haven't yet had time to do this. What we thought we would do was to take the most specific bug where we thought even the specification wasn't very clear on the subject. So we took the trickiest one and we tried that on other simulators. So we discovered an incorrect instruction in a well-known simulator, QEMU, found an instruction where the x86 prefixes could grant memory access in the simulator, which was not in the real hardware. And this, the offset was controllable by the program. So it could go in a malware analyzer saying, I'm looking in a not unsuspected memory, and in fact go to a suspect area of memory in the hardware. So this bug was reported. And to conclude, we have demonstrated that we can factorize developments and not redevelop virtualization simulation building blocks for various use cases ranging from safety to security, and do this with very little additional cost or changes, enabling us to implement this automatic verification and validation method by means of code inspection. This, we've applied this method generically. We've gained in trust for these simulators, and we have opened two avenues of research: system instruction characterization together with their side effects. Everyone's working on that. But we have opened some new avenues, but this is well documented. But another area is architecture-independent instruction scanning, because we could use that to develop the simulation if you have a new processor. So we could look at the processor and try and work out agnostically what it can do, how it's structured, just doing directed scanning. Thank you.
Merci, Yves. Donc la parole est à la salle.
So we have some time for questions on this presentation. Thank you for your presentation. How long do you need to develop a processor model? Good question. It's generally incremental because people will ask something and then something else. On top of that, we try to factorize development so we can use it in different projects. End-to-end, depending on the processor, an Intel-type processor, sorry, I didn't get the order of magnitude. It was 2 to something and 10 to something. With Usland Toad, yeah, in 6 months, we could have something that works on all, we could glimpse all the applications. In 6 months, we could have something that runs all the applications, but to have a level of trust, more credible. 2 man months. And after 2 years, you would have a correct model? Sorry, minimum of 2 years is the quantity, sorry. People who want to do performance analysis often work directly on PCBs. And that's a good point because in some malware detects that they are in a sandbox because it eventually works out that it is in a simulator. We've never managed to properly calibrate timing. That timing is an issue which might analyze it to. Even Linux will detect that through the timer that it is in a sandbox. Thank you. Another question. Thank you for the presentation. That's a great job. The 135 QEMU bugs. Was that you that found those? Well, not really. Other people are doing the same thing and found some of them. I think that those bugs were from Cavern. So KVM and QEMU. There was the hypervisor and the processor simulator. Those are two different things. And if there's a bug in QEMU, it's not quite serious. It's emulators are bug. Nobody's actually looked at it yet. KVM is more significant because it's a hypervisor, and some people will be dependent on that more critically. A QEMU bug is not that drastic. But people were, the KVM, the people from Orange, 72 non-assigned bugs, or some of them non-assigned, not being dealt with, that is more scary. But we recommend factorizing development because we realize that even a huge community cannot keep up with the speed. And we need automation techniques, otherwise we are going to fall well behind. It's not that they're not working hard, but there is just so much to do. Thank you for the presentation. It's a great job you're doing there. The learning phase for a new processor, is it intrusive? Can it change the processor behavior, or are you just scanning? Another good question. If we were really agnostic, we should have no familiarity with the processor we're looking at. Of course, we might change something. That would be quite difficult. But if we know the processor, and again, then we have some scenarios, if we could do snapshotting, we cheat a bit. We work on one of the assemblers rather than on the processor. We look at a compiler for the processor, so we look at text output in assemblers for the processor, and we scan that quickly, which is much safer than working on the assembler rather than on the processor. But we could look at JTAG and hardware bugs looking at the processor itself. It would definitely be interesting. I don't know if that really fully answers your question. One more question. Right down at the front here. So if I have a hardware bug which is a bit obscure, which needs several instructions, would it be, is the context wiped out from the hardware between each test? Another good question. The processor won't necessarily have this type of bug, and it's a bit what we said for applications. It's difficult to get back to the source. There's a bug at the moment in Intel processors that we have suspected for 2 or 3 years now. Firefox said there's a cache problem. They can't reproduce it because it's a combination, very obscure combination of past events that produce this bug. And so Intel has published something recently, and it's an entire generation of processors that are affected. But I unfortunately don't have any miracle cure for that. For concealed states of the processor with a number of instructions, we'll never detect that. We assume that processors are fully validated and don't have this type of bug. Thank you, Eve.